When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
I'm going to start this one with a quote by Michael Mead of the Living Myth podcast, Michael Mead the philosopher. The quote runs as follows. It's interesting that old stories about wisdom will often involve animals. As if to say, we have to get out of our typical way of seeing ourselves in order to see both where we are trapped and where transformation might be found. When I heard that, I was like, I am capturing that, and I'm going to use that in my presentations about Baron von Baer and the case of the two-faced statue, because inevitably somebody's going to ask, why animals? But I know I'm going to talk a lot about in the upcoming micro essays about this book. I'm going to talk about why animals, probably from a lot of different angles. But the angle I want to take today came from a prompt provided by one of you kind people who listen to this thing. I have a form set up at baronvonbaer.com/AMA, as in ask me anything. And you can submit thoughts, questions, and wonderings, and I will respond to them throughout this whole series of different explorations of my experience in making this book and why this book that means so much to me. And the question that I got is, do you feel your political beliefs make their way into your work? Would you want them to? And how would you feel if someone challenged you on teaching your beliefs to children? That's a fair question. And especially coming off of the last essay that I did about this whole idea, like my thoughts on violence and entertainment, I think the answer is, yeah, my political beliefs do filter into my work in one way or another. And I don't know how much I'd be able to stop that from happening. If the story is coming from some place of truth, it's coming from like the way I see the world, and that's going to, in some way or another, have a flavor of my political beliefs as well. And how, you know, I'm going to pick at this from all the angles at once. Because how would I feel if someone challenged me on teaching my beliefs to children? Well, I teach children all the time. So I am, you know, like in my classroom, I know my philosophy is coming through. I had this wonderful experience of talking with a former student who is now in college. A small percentage of my students stay in touch with me well into their, you know, college years and beyond. And it's so enlivening to watch them grow and have them still want to keep that thread alive between us, right? Sometimes it's a check-in with advice against something that one of their art teachers are saying to them now. Like, does this track with you? Sometimes just that they just want to, you know, sort of share the exciting things that have been happening with them. I love it all. But this one student sat across from me and told me that they always felt safe in my presence because my classroom always had an atmosphere of loving kindness that didn't put up with any baloney. What a gift to get that from somebody. And I would say that, you know, that is actually one of my beliefs, is that like kindness, compassion, restraint are all very important to me. You could say that my position on violence in my storytelling telegraphs something about how I feel about going to war with people, right? Accepting that, okay, maybe it is necessary sometimes, but it should always be the last thing we think about, right? So that's a political belief. And I've never had a parent who's heard the atmosphere of my classroom challenge me on anything that I've said. Because I think the thing I do avoid is that I never tell the children who's a good politician, who's a bad politician. As a matter of fact, I taught the day after the 2016 U.S. presidential election, and we all know what happened then. And understandably, my students were really confused about how to feel about what's happening in the world, because from their perspective, they're just watching a bunch of really angry adults be really angry about this. on either side, whatever side you want to take. The people were riled. I think we're still suffering aftershocks of whatever that was an expression of. But my response in the classroom was, this is an opportunity for us to really think about how we are all dependent on one another. We need each other, and something's happened in this world that makes us not see that. And we as artists need to help people see that interdependency. So our assignment was, we had to take the position of somebody we absolutely disagree with and try to write a short comic story about seeing the world through their eyes, right? Not agreeing with them, but understanding them, right? So I feel like that was a political act in a way. Was it one that would make either side angry? Maybe. But I've had parents stand outside of my classroom waiting to pick up their kids, and they hear what's happening in that room. And like I said, I never get any pushback from them on the way I carry myself in that room and the way I talk to them about things. As a matter of fact, sometimes it becomes a problem because the parents want me to mentor their child outside of the classroom. they get a lot out of your presence. Can you please be around them all the time? That's very flattering. There's not enough of me for that. But one thing that I will say, and I will accept as a sort of, is it a political belief? It's an attitudinal thing that I invite children into. And I could see some people taking issue with it in that, and I know I told the story on other microcasts or the podcast, but I'll capture it here because it relates to this. My classroom environment, and I should be talking about the book, but I think this kind of relates to everything that I'm talking about. The energy level in my classroom, I describe as walking the knife's edge between, you know, safety and Lord of the Flies. Like, I like a classroom that always feels like it's about to teeter into chaos. And the reason I like that is because it's mentally very stimulating, both for me and the students. Kids have a very good time in my class, and my classes are very loud. Like, when I taught at the Ann Arbor Art Center, one of the things that I heard from administration was, oh, we always know when you're teaching because your classroom's right above our administrative offices, and it always sounds like there's a wrestling match happening up there. Which I took as, like, great praise. I'm like, thank you, you know? That's what I hope for. I want people to know that this is a joyful space, right? But not everybody felt that way. Because early on in my time there, and this is when there was a different administration in the building, another teacher who was in a neighboring classroom came into my classroom, walked right in, and shouted at me and the children and said, you are being way too loud. She was so angry. She was so angry with this. She's like, there's other people, you know, there's other people taking classes in this building. Knock it off, right? Now, this is an important moment because this is a moment where I get to model for the kids how we can engage thoughtfully in the world. Now, am I going to get into a fight with this woman in front of the kids? Well, that didn't seem appropriate to me at the time. I mean, I can take things up with her later on about this if I want to. But what I chose to do in the moment was, I said, because the kids were obviously, you know, shocked. They were shocked out of their joy by this very angry woman. And I said, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. We'll try to keep it down. She walks out the room and slams the door, right? And as she slams the door, I turn to the kids and I bend down a little bit and I giggle with them. I'm like, that was pretty funny, wasn't it? Let's just keep going with what we're doing, right? Now, if you think about what the energy of that moment is, that's a subversive act, right? That's me saying to the kids is like, hey, you know what? There's going to be adults who get really riled up about stuff, and that's theirs. That's not ours. And as long as we are operating in the spirit of, you know, joyful collaboration, positive intention, we build each other up, we don't tear each other down, that's awesome. Now, hey, I've had situations where kids cross the line with me, and I've had to tell them, go sit out in the hallway until your parents get here. That was unacceptable. I'm sorry. There's no discussion. You're just done here today. We'll have a conversation next week about this if you want to come back, but that was uncalled for, right? There are lines that I draw in there, and they're all around, you know, I don't tolerate cruelty. I don't tolerate disrespect or bullying. So that's where it's like the whole I don't put up with baloney idea. But my point is that and you know, if the kid's parent wants to talk with me about it, and usually in those kind of situations I will talk with the parents, say like, hey, here's the thing that happened. I want you to know about it. Ball's in your court now. But were a parent to say, hey, you're teaching my child to be subversive, I'm ready to go to bat for that, because I do. This is something that, and I think this is in my work as well to a degree, is that something I tell my students all the time, and I say it within earshot of parents, is you're going to encounter a lot of people who look like me, all gray-haired and very accomplished, and they're going to tell you that this is the right way to do it. And it might be, but it might not be. And your job as an artist is to say, are you sure? And see if you can find a way around it. If they say this is absolutely the way it needs to be done, this is the right way to make art, this is the right way to do a drawing, see if you can find another way around it. Test that idea first before you just accept it. Because the truth of the matter is that we're all just faking this. We don't know what we're doing. We're doing our very best, but we don't know what we're doing, right? That's something I think it has a political flavor that I try to impart to my students. So, and if a parent were to say, hey, you're teaching my child to be subversive, I'm going to say, yeah, that's what artists do. I'm ready to have a joyful, meaningful conversation with you about that. And if we can't agree, then my gosh, take your kid out of my class. And I feel like I'm ready to have those conversations around my book too. If people want to take me to task for, well, let's see, what are some of the ideas in there? Some of the ideas that I would call a political stripe. My main character is a scholar who learns the weaknesses of scholarship. That it's an incomplete form of learning and understanding. If somebody wants to get mad at me about that, I'm ready to go to bat for that. Because that's another thing that comes up in my classrooms, is parents will say, well, does my kid need to go to school? And I'll say, maybe. I say this all the time. I said this at an assembly recently. I was at an assembly in high school, and one of the students asked, do I need to go to art school to be an artist? And I said, maybe, maybe not. And a certain cohort of students cheered at that thought. And I watched the teachers look a little bit nervous about that. Like, is he going to start bashing on education? No, I'm not going to bash on education, but I'm just going to say, explore it thoughtfully. Decide if it's the right thing for you. And here are some things to think about in the questions that you ask yourself about this, right? I'm ready to have that discussion with parents, and I have it with them all the time. And I watch their faces as I see the ones who are not happy with what I'm saying. Like, no, education is always good. I'm like, it is. But there's other kinds of ways to educate. You can go to an institution and do it, or you can do it on your own. But I want my child to have a really safe and secure future. I'm like, okay, well, I applaud you for that, because you should want that. That's exactly the right thing for you to want for your child, because they're your child and you're their parent. But it's ultimately not a safe and secure world from my perspective. And so we can equip them to be resilient and resourceful and flexible. How about that? So that they can adapt to a variety of situations. And sometimes I'm talking past them. Sometimes they're talking past me, I'm sure. We all got our blind spots. But, I think, I guess maybe I might, somebody listening might think I'm sidestepping the question because I'm not talking about, you know, specific political issues like gun rights, like abortion, etc. But I think, given what I've shared, both in my work and the way I talk on this little project, you can guess where I stand on these things. So, and I think another thing that I think is a strong belief of mine is that I don't feel it's my job as an artist or as a teaching artist to tell my students what to think. So when you get to like the specificity of are you right or are you left, are you up or down, do you say yes or no to these things, that's for me to decide for myself when I vote. It's not for me to tell students what to do with. I don't know if that's sidestepping it or not, but I feel that that's really important to me. It's very important that I think that's what makes me successful as a teacher, and I think it's what makes my work feel accessible, is that I'm not telling them directly. I'm not trying to persuade necessarily directly. Now, but I am trying to create examples. Like, for instance, there are characters in the book who I've left their genders deliberately ambiguous. So you can apply what you want onto them. You know, there are characters who use specific pronouns, but there are other characters who I'm like, you know what? Could be a guy, could be a gal, could be, you know, could be any of the genders. And I think that leaving things deliberately ambiguous in that way so that the reader has an opportunity to see what they want to see in the story, I think that's appropriate for an artist to do. I think if I don't want to talk about anybody else's art in this way. I want to only talk about mine. So someone could take issue with that. And that would be another discussion I'd be ready to have with a parent or teacher, is that, you know what, the world has all kinds of people in it, and our art should have all kinds of people in it. Because, and this is another thing that I've done as a teaching artist, is that I invite cartoonist friends I know to do Skype visits in my classrooms, and I am deliberate about, like, I want to bring people who look like all stripes. I want people from all different backgrounds in this room, because I want these kids to see that the world is a broad and interesting place. So I think that's another thing I'm ready to have a conversation about. So again, I think the trick is, as I think about the question, the way I like to engage with it is understanding that my beliefs are going to be in the work. But there's also a level of, there's a lack of control that I have. Like, when it's in the world, it's no longer just mine, right? People are going to put their own thoughts on top of it. And so there might be surprises. There will inevitably be surprises. Things that I think are absolutely innocent or obvious or non-controversial at all. Like, well, of course this is the way the world feels to me, might be incredibly offensive to somebody. I've certainly received hateful messages from people in the past who just object to how I show up in the world, for sure. But I think the trick is that, like, making sure that whatever I knowingly put into the work is something that I feel ready to stand by and ready to say, okay, not for you. Agree to disagree. This is not for you. I mean, that's a privilege of my work, is that they don't have to read it. I hope it doesn't get banned or anything like that. That'd be a drag if, you know, grown-ups were deliberately trying to keep it from children because they're afraid that the children are going to act different if they understand things in a different way. Oh, that's a whole messed up bag of worms. It makes me deeply sad when that happens. On the other hand, it's pointing to the power of the medium. It's like, whoa, comics are suddenly really important literature if you're so scared of it that you got to keep it away from people. What's so scary about the big, bad, dumb comics that are bad reading, that kids can't, you know, that are only for kids who are too lazy to read real books, you know? Part of me wants to come at them with a little bit of that attitude. And, you know, I think there are ways in which I could do it a joyful and playful way. But yeah, I this might be naivete. I'm standing here recording this, you know, probably like a year before the book comes out. And right now, it doesn't feel like there's anything that's very dangerous in the beliefs that I put in this book. The core beliefs as I see them, as expressive of the plot and the characters, are how hard it is to grow. How many times we have to learn a lesson before we accept it. That's one of the big ideas in the plot. Baron von Baer does not come easily to his transformation. The misunderstanding of where you're standing in a story. Pickles thinks she's this, but she's really that. And she comes to understand that by the end of the story. And Wilhelmina undergoes her own transformation in that she is deeply wounded and does not know how to process it because she feels so unseen by the world. And so she lashes out. Why wouldn't you? And how our heroes respond to that is, I think, based on my values of, yeah, let's have it look really cool. It's going to be an amazing scene full of like really fearful imagery and a lot of personal peril. But our hero is going to show up with the attitude of healing, not conquering. And that's going to be the key to solving the problem. I'm ready to face somebody who opposes that. Who's going to come in the room and be like, no, healing is wrong? Well, some people might, won't they? Some people might. And, you know, it's like this is more of, at the risk of sounding naive, I'm still hopeful that we can get to a point where more of us can talk to each other instead of scream at each other. And I think that that's another image that comes to mind when you say the word politics right now. And actually, it was the same 25 years ago. It was the same 40, 50 years ago. And I'm not going to speculate on the reasons why. I'm not that kind of a philosopher. I'm a cartoonist who writes stories for children. But I am hopeful that, you know, in my small way, with my book, I can show children that, you know what? Pay attention to that part when Baron von Baer just shows up and listens. When he learns how to listen to people and not talk over people. When he learns to get past his own picture of himself as an authority on a subject and sits down and says, nope, I want to know what's going on in your head. That's when the energy and the direction of the story flips and it becomes something else. And everything gets a lot safer. I think that's a political belief as well. But it's one that, you know, I don't know. I think when we're really angry, that's a hard thing to listen to and hear. So, I think I'll think about this some more and maybe come back to it. But I hope that this was an interesting walk around the question, and thank you for providing the question. If this kind of thinking was intriguing to you, then I'm asking you, please go check out baronvonbaer.com. That's where you can find out more information about this book that means so much to me, that I put so much of my soul into. Did I put my soul into it? I didn't put my soul into it. I did a lot of soul work to make this book. It was a tough book to make, and it's just so infused with my beliefs about, I don't know, but what's really important to me, but with cute little bears and magical characters. There's also a whole business in it about object and cultural repatriation that we could talk about. That's another thing that is like kind of a an interesting belief to bring onto the table for discussion, because once again, it's one of those things where I say, like, it's complicated, right? Okay, there's this Egyptian obelisk inside this, you know, British museum. How did it get there? You're making it accessible to people who can't necessarily just go take a flight to Egypt. Sure. That's a pro, but what's the cons? Well, let's look at how hard this is to navigate this question, you know? Science Comics Rockets had political beliefs in it, in that we decided to tell the stories of rocket history through the perspective of the animals who participated in rocket history. Why? And Anne and I talked about this while we were on book tour. Is we wanted to raise the question about our relationship with how we treat animals as a culture and as cultures around the world without wagging our finger at people, right? I've been a vegetarian for 26 years at the time of this recording. And the reason is, it's not a health reason. It's because I think that, like, one morning I just said, you know what? I don't think we're as kind to animals as we could be. And so I decided to do something about it from my perspective. You know, like, what's an action I could take right now? Okay, how about I never eat them again? And I feel pretty strongly about that. So strongly that I haven't done it for a long time. And, that's a lifestyle change. That's something that affects the way I move through the world. But we didn't want our art to turn into us saying, shame on you. We didn't want to chase people away. We wanted to point to, wow, look at how we thought it was okay at one point to tranquilize a bear and shoot it out of a supersonic plane and check which bones break, right? And we say point blank in the book, don't worry, they all survived until they were euthanized and dissected. So, yeah, my beliefs make it into the work. But I think for me, this is mine, this isn't anybody else's, this is my thing that I'm owning, is that I want to do it in a way that it feels harmonious with the art for me. And if somebody wants to have a discussion with me, says, but for instance, many people in my family, don't you just want to eat a big steak? And I laugh and say, no, you can, but I choose not to, and you know why, you know? So, I think that there's instances where I have had these conversations about the ideas that get put into my work. And for me, like, the main thing to remember, the thing that I struggle to remember, believe me, it's not easy, but I try to remember that the difference between what's theirs and what's mine. This is mine to feel, that's yours to feel. That's not mine, that's yours. So there's that. Okay. I think I did like a second lap thinking about this right at the end. One more time, baronvonbear.com. Pre-order the book. Support this project that means so much to me. I think you'll like it. If you stuck around this long, I think you'll like the book. So baronvonbear.com. If you'd like to submit a question, thought, or wondering, baronvonbear.com/AMA, as in ask me anything. Okay. Thank you for listening and supporting this project. Until next time, remember, everybody.
Orko certainly helped us out in today's adventure, and he learned a good lesson, too. He made a promise to the Ice Lord he thought he could break. But Adam showed him you shouldn't make a promise knowing you're not going to keep it. People judge you by many things. Your appearance, your honesty, the way you act. Those things show your character. When you make a promise and don't keep it, it shows bad character. So always think before you speak and mean what you say. That way what you say will be respected. See you again soon.